This is the Bob Davis Podcast, the New Talk Podcast 381. The Big East road trip continues. This was a very interesting 24 hours. It's hard to believe it's only been 24 hours. Again, one of the cool things about traveling is you think it's taking longer than it is, and one day kind of bleeds into the next, and you kind of forget where you are and what you're doing. And of course, I'm still doing business and taking care of things and, you know, operating untethered in the Mobile Podcast Command Center. And so this has been an interesting day starting out. When I speak of day, I'm talking about 24-hour periods starting 24 hours ago, leaving Western Virginia. And I'll tell you where I've been in this podcast, podcast 381. Well, where I am and where I've been, it has been generally really hot. We're talking about the 90s, and I love the 90s. It's great. We're going to get into hot weather in Minnesota. As you know, I've been predicting the global warming summer. In fact, Greg Ryan from Ryan Plumbing and Heating recently said to me, make sure you tell these people to get ready for the global warming summer by having their air conditioning checked. Why? Because if it operates more efficiently, you'll save money, and chances are you're going to be using that air conditioning a lot because people from Minnesota don't like the heat. Now, I like heat. You can't get it hot enough for me. Tropical heat is great. Humidity doesn't bother me. Desert heat doesn't bother me. But for people from Minnesota generally, they don't like it when it gets to be above 80. Then it gets tough for them, and so they want to have their air conditioning operating. Do yourself a favor. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for an AC check, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too for over 60 years. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. And a quick message, just want to mention, if you're a plumber, Ryan Plumbing and Heating is also looking to hire some plumbers because business has been good. And don't forget emergency service. Ryan excels at emergency service, whether it's residential or business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too, as I said, for over four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue over in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. I'm sure you've seen their trucks around. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So I am in Cape Charles, Virginia, which is on the, well, I don't know if this is how you pronounce it or not, and I don't have any internet. I have my phone, and that's about as good as it gets, the Delmar Peninsula. Is that how you pronounce it? Is that right? I don't know. I'll have to check it here in a second. When I do, I'll have to, in fact, I'll check it right now. Why not? Because I am sitting in the podcast command unit. The engines are running, as you can tell. And this has been an amazing day. And I'll very quickly, I just want to tell you where I've been. I started out 24 hours ago in Western Virginia. Left, then went to Richmond. Left Richmond about 24 hours ago. Actually, it was sundown, so not quite 24 hours ago. A little bit more than 24 hours ago. And drove, which isn't too far, over to Virginia Beach. And I had visions of myself. This is great. I had visions of myself finding this lonely spot on the beach where I would be able to set the truck up and just kind of relax and enjoy myself there as the only person on the lonely beach. Well, I haven't been to Virginia Beach in many, many, many years. I was a kid the last time I was in Virginia Beach, and of course it has changed a lot. It looks like Atlantic City. No, I mean, it looks like the Jersey Coast. And if you guys, there's actually a Jersey Coast podcast in, I think it was 2010 when I did the Jersey Coast podcast, and it talks about passing through all those towns in New Jersey. So Virginia Beach these days is really, really built up. Lots of hotels. And I drove and drove and drove, couldn't find a place on the beach. Did find kind of a little neighborhood area where I could have stopped, but I didn't think it was a good idea. It was a public beach access, and I did walk down to the beach, tried to record some audio. It's hot and really windy, which is really great. I love that. But the audio I recorded just wasn't good, so I climbed back in the vehicle and then continued to head, I guess north out of Virginia Beach. And ended up at First Flight State Park. So if you're a state park person, you can look that up, or federal. I don't know if it's a national. I guess it's a national park. And I was really excited because they had shore power and everything else, except I wasn't able to get one of those positions. And so I was very excited. Again, I was going to get close to the beach and pull up to the beach, and I pulled. It was like camping in the pines of northern Minnesota. And of course, I don't really have any camping gear. I just have the cot and the air mattress and the pillow and the moving blankets. And I wasn't about to open this thing up and have a million bugs in here again. So I kind of hung out in the vehicle all night long, and it was really hot in here. Let me tell you, it was a sauna in here. And a couple of times I opened up and went outside, but it was very hot, and it's still hot. I am here in Cape Charles. The reason I'm here, I stopped at a McDonald's down the road. Again, in search, my chaotic search for Wi-Fi, fast enough to upload podcasts and other stuff that I have to do. So I was in the McDonald's getting coffee, which, by the way, I had to throw out. It was awful. And was talking to the manager, and he mentioned that the tall ships are coming in or are already here. And so this is going to be where I am sitting right now in the parking lot across from the Cape Charles Hotel, which I'm told is quite swanky, sitting here in the parking lot with the machine running because I want to record this podcast. And I don't know when I'm going to post it. The plan here is when these businesses open up tomorrow, there's a coffee place right across the way, and I'll go in there and I'll upload from over there. I've got my fingers crossed, but I'm not sure. So this has been quite a day. So I stopped in Virginia Beach and slept in the truck, and then got up, made some coffee as usual in the little coffee maker here in the Mobile Podcast Command Unit. And last night I could have done a podcast, but I was like, I don't think so. You know, I had a lot of time with family, and sometimes that can be a little stressful. It was good, but it was stressful. So I just kind of decided to chill out there at First Flight State Park. The cool thing is, and I really should have recorded this, but anyway, it's what they do in Virginia Beach is there's a naval air station there for jets, and they do a lot of practicing late at night flying out to carriers and back the young officers being instructed on flight for jets. So you look up in the sky all day long, and you're seeing F-18s and E-2Cs and all sorts of different military aircraft, and it's really cool. And so I stayed there, and then I did yoga in Virginia Beach at what was that place called? Something. I don't remember now. Hot Yogi or something like that, which actually was great. That was a great experience. I'm glad I did that. And then I jumped in the vehicle and finally got in touch with my nephew, who is flying helicopters in the Navy at Norfolk. And they say at Norfolk, that the air base there. And So I visited Dan, who is flying helicopters, and so you're hearing the sound of some of the helicopters that were out on the flight line waiting to get fueled or to take off, and really had an interesting experience. We talked about so much. He has an interesting story because he...
Either way, this guy's going to take off, and this guy's going to come in too.
...started as an enlisted man and worked his way into a berth, or whatever you call it. He got into Annapolis and got through the academy. Meanwhile, he's flying these helicopters, and I got to go in and look on the base and see the helicopters. We were going to try for a simulator, which I was really nervous about because I was like, what if I break it? And he was like, you're not going to break it. Don't worry about that. But they had to give the simulator time up to somebody that needed it. And they were doing a lot of flying on a Friday night, which some of those guys weren't too happy about. But it's very interesting to see life on a military base, especially a big military base. And we were talking about it, and we came to the conclusion that this base, the aviation and surface fleet base at Norfolk, Newport News, is probably the biggest base in the world for any military, and certainly, if not the biggest, one of the biggest bases that the U.S. Navy has. And it's a marked difference from the civilian parts of Virginia Beach and Norfolk, or Norfolk, as they say it. I always hesitate to say that because I was trained in radio. When you say Norfolk, it's not Norfolk, it's Norfolk. That's the way you're supposed to say it. And anyway, so everybody has a job on a military base, and they all do their job. And that's the thing that I think is the most interesting. Is there downtime? I suppose. You know, you see people going to the PX or whatever they call it now and getting gas and washing their cars and things of that nature. And there's a little area where these stores are, the military grocery store where everything is 10% off because they don't pay taxes. And then there's a Chili's and a Pizza Hut and everything else. And then all over this base, people are busy and it's well kept. And there's also the thing that I thought was really interesting, and I don't know, some of you people who have military experience, I'm sure, can email me about this. I don't, so this is kind of an interesting experience for me. There's definitely a class system in place in the military. And, you know, there's places for the enlisted men, there's places for the chiefs, there's places for the lower officers, there's places for the higher officers. And, you know, he was driving me around and showing me some of the base housing in addition to the different, we saw a couple of aircraft carriers and destroyers, and we saw all the aviation stuff, which is helicopters at this base. The jets are, I believe, at Oceana or over on the other side of Virginia Beach. And, you know, you should see the Admiral's houses. They're amazing. And they have, one of them has a pavilion. And the reason I bring it up is not to poo-poo it, because my nephew was saying, you know, I don't begrudge these guys their houses because they paid their dues and they have a lot of responsibility to have these houses. And then, you know, the different housing for different groups of people. But this is interesting because we're in the process of having a huge inequality conversation in this country about what people are owed and what people deserve and what they should have. And then you go on to a military base and people, first of all, everyone's working because it's the military and they all have a job or they wouldn't be there. Secondly, they all have things of their own that they call their own. They all have space of their own and they all have, you know, it seems to me, sort of little ceremonies and things of their own. So, and then somehow all of this great mechanism comes together to do things like run aircraft carriers all over the world and destroyers and aircraft and everything else. And everybody, and as Dan was saying, you know, I have my little job. That's my little piece of the way things are. And then everybody else has their job and it all comes together down the line. It's a completely different experience from being in the real world where sometimes people don't have jobs. Sometimes people do great things and they don't get any money for it. Sometimes people do sort of great things, they get paid a lot of money. Sometimes people do amazing things and get paid amazing amounts of money. It's almost like a free-for-all. It is not a well-ordered place. And it's an interesting perspective because, you know, we were talking about why are there political parties? And because the civilian world, the civilian political world is messy. We don't live in a military society where someone gives an order someplace and something happens. He goes, why can't it be like it is in the military? I said, because in the military, when an admiral gives an order, something gets done all the way down the line to the seaman. In the public, in the real world, in politics especially, the president gives an order and virtually nothing happens, you know, because it's politics. And we're seeing that play out, and people get frustrated with that. You know, they want things to be done. They want things to be fixed, and they want things to be fixed their way. Now, I know in the military things get fixed, but sometimes it doesn't get fixed according to what any individual soldier or seaman or airman expects or Marine expects to be done. But they have to accept the fact that an order's been given. In real life, in public life, in normal civilian life, you know, people have different opinions about stuff, and that's just the way it is. And coalitions form because people have disagreements. So that was one of the big takeaways from all of that. That the other thing is that in that general region, Virginia Beach and Norfolk, it's booming. I mean, there appears to be plenty of places. There's no dearth of places to go to eat, places that are open late. There are things going on all over the place in that part of the country. I mean, obviously, Virginia Beach has a lot of tourism, but because of that base, it is very active in that particular part of the country. Lots of traffic, and it's beautiful, and the weather's beautiful, and it felt great to have the sun on my face for the first time, really, in a long time, and then 90-plus degrees. It was 93, 94 degrees today. Fabulous. And just being out on the beach. And, well, I do have to say, I don't wear shoes. You know, when it's hot, I just don't wear shoes. and you kind of, my feet are burned, okay? My skin is not burned. I wasn't out in the sun long enough to get a sunburn, but my feet are burned because at the camp area, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the beach. Well, it's a half a mile walk to get to the beach, and then you go down this sort of ramp that's made out of wood. You know what I'm talking about, beach access. And, you know, National Park beach access is made out of wood. And I'm walking along, and I started walking on the sand. Oh, my God, that is hot. And it was hot all the way. I ran down to the water to get my feet in the water, and then I had to come back. So my feet are burned from the sand and then ground up from the sand. And then I walked on the pavement when I went to go to yoga this afternoon. Walked on the pavement, and the pavement was super hot, so my feet are burned. And I love it. You can burn me. I would much rather be hot than cold in any case, any shape, any time. And it's a great little drive to Virginia Beach from Richmond. If you ever do make the trip, you go 460. You don't take 64 because 64 is a lot further. If you're in southern or western part of Richmond, you don't take 64. But the other reason to take 460 is that it's 460 east. There are a ton of really cool just places, barbecue places, peanut places, little towns all along 460, and it's a great drive. It's a wonderful drive. So I did that last night, and that was great. There's nothing better than, I mean, I'll let you hear some audio because I'll tell you about one other thing I did. I got to mention this. As I was leaving the base, I decided to come up here to the, I was gonna look up the Del Mar Peninsula. Let's see if I'm right about this. Let's just see. I don't think it's the, I actually know that that's not the name of it, but let's see. Let's see if I can. No, Del Mar Peninsula. Let's see if this is it. Don't you love listening to somebody doing searches? It's the Delmarva. Where did I get Delmar? You know where I got it? I'll tell you. There was a restaurant in the town that I used to live in that was like the diner in town. It was called Delmar's. I think it was called Delmar's, and I used to go there all the time. I probably got that wrong, too. It's the Delmarva Peninsula, and that is where I am right now. So I'm right out here in the ocean on the Virginia side. You go all the way up. It goes to the eastern shore, and so on one side is the Atlantic. The other side is the Chesapeake Bay. That's where I am. And it's really awesome here. It's really hot, too. And the weather changes when you get up on the other side. So I think it's... I'm going to end this podcast by talking about the variously named TPP, TAA, Trans-Pacific Trade Authority for the President of the United States. Apparently, there was an attempt today, actually, Friday, in podcast time to... push this through. This is the Pacific version of NAFTA, and we don't really know what is in this because we can't read it. So it's very interesting to me that Republicans are supporting this while Democrats oppose it. This is the Trade Promotion Authority Act, and I think it clearly shows one of the chief problems in the Republican Party. Democrats usually oppose Trade Promotion Authority or free trade because they believe free trade hurts American jobs. Republicans are promoting it for the same reason. In other words, they believe it helps jobs. They believe it helps the U.S. economy. It will give the president authority to conclude negotiations on the agreement without having to go back to Congress for the vote. And this gives the chief executive the ability to negotiate from a position of strength without having to say, hey, I'll see what Congress says, or at least that's what they say. And that's fair enough. That's usually what the effort to get trade authority is with Congress. The jobs issue is moot with me because I can't tell you how many times I've heard this refrain, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat meeting, and that is, quote, they shipped all of our jobs to China. Well, the fact is that as costs to produce in the United States have risen due to regulation, collective bargaining, and taxation, companies have moved their manufacturing overseas if they are able. It is exactly the same dynamic as when General Motors closed plants in the upper tier to move to work right-to-work states in the South, like Tennessee. And companies do it all the time. They move to Texas, they move to Tennessee, because they get what? A comparative advantage in labor costs. And manufacturing some products in the U.S. just doesn't make any sense anymore, because they're very cheap to produce overseas, whether it is China, Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines, whatever. Trade protection usually doesn't benefit the protected industry for long, if at all, and it opens the question, who is protected and who isn't? So who gets to be protected, fenced off, and who doesn't get to be protected and fenced off? If our country was doing everything it could to generate robust, dynamic growth, whatever you want to call it, I've talked about this many, many times, we wouldn't be talking about jobs as an issue at all, because we would have jobs. And if we managed 4+ economic growth, GDP, quarter to quarter for several quarters, pay and benefits wouldn't be a question either, because people with the right skills would be able to command better pay, hours and benefits. You know, one of the things that I see it mostly with guys in their 50s and 60s who say this, their jobs have been shipped overseas and they don't know what to do ever since. And I hear it also with people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who had white collar jobs that have been made quote unquote redundant, because when things change, and they do. See, we are raised with the idea that everything stays constant and that things don't change. But the fact is, things change. You know, just like that military base, those guys are moved around all over the world all the time. So they may live in a military base for a couple of years, then they go somewhere else and live in another military base for a couple of years. The constant is they're in the military, they're in the Navy or the Army or whatever. In this case, the constant is, you know, you always have the opportunity to move a house, you have the opportunity to change careers, you have the opportunity to learn new things. One of the things I've noticed with people who make this complaint a lot is, they haven't learned anything new, and they expected an industry, whether it's making cars or whatever it is, you know, a job at Honeywell, let's say, to stay the same forever. You know, I grew up with kids whose dads worked at the car plants or the steel mill, who thought that they, because their grandfather and their great-grandfather worked at the steel mill, that they were going to work at the steel mill, and that they were shocked when the steel mill closed at a certain point. And a lot of people just don't know what to do when that happens. This happens all the time, and it happens whether there's trade authority or not, because it's called progress. If we didn't have progress, we would all still be working on farms, you know, pulling one plow behind an oxen. Even farmers have used comparative advantage. They have used technology to be able to farm more efficiently and thus make more money. But having said all that, saying that we're helping the little guy by voting against trade authority is a pig in a poke. Most Democrats aren't doing anything to help anyone when it comes to the economy, especially not the president. And this isn't a statement of nastiness. It's a statement of the kinds of policies that they advocate don't produce economic growth. Your job is under more threat from vast improvements in IT, robotics, and autonomous machines, and the knock-on employment effects of Obamacare than it is from any free trade agreement. China already, by the way, has eliminated millions of jobs using IT and now robotics. And if China is able to eliminate jobs considering their comparative advantage in low-cost labor, can you imagine what is going on at manufacturers in the U.S.? Now, I oppose giving this president this authority because the American people have not been able to read this bill. It has been locked in a vault in Congress. It's not right that we haven't been able to read it, and no one in the media has been able to read it, so we cannot depend on our friends, quote-unquote, in the media to be able to give us any real information about what's in this bill. Maybe we should ask the Chinese hackers, because they probably know more about it than we do. And also because I don't think it is wise to grant this president any more authority to do anything. And this really is my primary reason for opposing this, and I don't understand why Republicans are continuing to push this. Now, as usual, anytime somebody comes up with a good argument, it's labeled a Republican talking point, or it's going to be referred to as, quote, populist, which is an overused label when the media wants to discredit anything. They call it populist, and nobody knows what that means, but it sounds good, right? This was my argument long before the elephantine Republicans picked it up. And I don't think it's a specious argument. This president has consistently pushed the envelope when it comes to hyperpartisan use of the executive, even as he derides Republicans in Congress, and now the Republican Congress for partisan behavior. While this goes on, He continues to promulgate regulations that are going to be challenged in court, probably successfully, including Obamacare and his interpretation of executive discretion regarding immigration. Most recently, the Labor Department reported it will be adjusting by a substantial amount the minimum pay requirements to qualify for overtime for American workers, which is going to have a negative effect on business. But really, it's going to make government more expensive and less efficient. It is actually reasonable to suggest that it might be better to wait until we have a new president to consider granting this authority. There is certainly no hurry. There never is to pass this bill. You're looking for used cars, another car is always around the corner. You're looking for a new house, there's always another house. Even when you're trying to find the perfect wife, there's always another woman or another man, depending on where you're coming from. Why then are Republicans hell-bent for leather to pass this bill? I'm mystified, but I can tell you, I don't know how they can stand up and criticize President Obama for his stance and action on immigration and Obamacare and turn around and not even question this track record when it comes to executive power in relation to granting him this extreme authority, this, special authority, extraordinary authority to negotiate this trade agreement. You know, I don't think it's, look, I don't trust President Obama politically. I don't dislike the man. I don't know the man. I just don't like what he wants to do. And I don't think there's anything particularly partisan or populist about saying so. Finally, there's so much silly stuff going on associated with this bill that goes right into your head if you're watching television. For one thing, Paul Ryan is trying to insert an amendment that would prevent any deals being cut on climate change, which ought to tell you something about what we're dealing with here, because he's still pushing for the agreement to be passed, and there's things in there about climate which we don't know. I don't want this country to be locked into some kind of climate agreement. And NBC actually conducted a poll and announced that the trade authority bill is a tough sell. People are against it. First of all, and I'll close with this, actually, how on earth are people expected to be able to pass judgment on something they haven't been able to read, and that even the media and some in Congress haven't been able to read it as well, not to mention the fact that I doubt that in the full bloom of summer across this country, as we are currently, anyone is steeping themselves in the pros and cons of this agreement. This is how absurd things are in this country right now. It's nuts. And I think that the more I see it, the more I feel I need to say that I really think the chief political problem in the United States isn't political parties. It isn't gridlock. We have a dearth of politicians and real leaders who understand what the problem is. And I know because I read what they say every day. I see what is being written about these problems. I don't think people, first of all, you have to identify what the problem is. These guys have no idea what the problem is, at least based on what I'm hearing them say. They don't, therefore, if you can't identify the problem, how can you fix it? And that includes and is especially directed at Republicans. Let us not forget that it was Richard Nixon who took the country off the gold standard not so long ago and caused the currency to start floating around like crazy. We have a lot of what might be classified as Rockefeller Republicans. These are Republicans who believe they can make government work better, and they call themselves reform Republicans. When the fact is, government just doesn't work very well under the best of circumstances, and I'll take you back to the military base, because that's really the best circumstance. And even there, you hear complaints all the time about hurry up and wait, and this isn't getting fixed right, and it takes a lot of work to get things organized so that it works right. And in that place, when somebody gives an order, all down the line, the orders are carried out in one form or another. So what's going on in the country is taxation and regulation are basically choking the little guy, not inequality and lack of services. And we don't really have any politicians out there who are able to identify how to fix that, because they aren't identifying that as the problem. They're identifying all kinds of other things. And solutions are being called by different labels and things like populist. And I don't know where people have learned their history. I don't know where they get their political acumen. But I just am seeing more and more and more on this beautiful, warm summer evening that is off. So I will leave you with some more helicopter sounds, which are really cool. And I got to sit in one, and I'm using that for the picture for this podcast. So hope you enjoyed podcast 381. Thanks to Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for sponsoring Podcast 381. Don't forget to get your AC checked, because they can save you money, because it will run more efficiently. Sometimes they have to clean the coils in the compressor and the condenser unit outside. Sometimes there's stuff that needs to be done inside. Also, if you have plumbing problems on an emergency, something like that, they're really good at that. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Got to thank the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com. Whoops. Mad K Studios, creating quality original automotive artwork. Mad K is going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer. I'm going to tell you more as we get closer to those events. Maybe the Mobile Podcast Command Studio will be there too. If you want more information, click on the banners at thebobdavispodcast.com, and you'll find out more. It takes you to their Facebook page. Also, on all of the sponsors of thebobdavispodcast.com, you can click on those banners and get more and more and more information. Thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, as well as TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, and TuneIn.com. There are players for both of those services. If you want to listen on the page, you can also listen on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. People have been asking me, how do I get these on an iPhone? Believe it or not, all you got to do is find the podcast app. It's a little purple app, and it has sort of the beehive kind of radio kind of tower thing. You click on that, and that will bring up podcasts. You enter my name, Bob Davis, or the Bob Davis Podcast in the search window, and it will find the podcast. There's 381, so if you subscribe, you're going to have a lot of podcasts to listen to, or you can just listen to them as they come. If you subscribe, they are sent directly to your phone, and you don't have to subscribe again, and that's super cool. So thank you for doing that. If you're doing that, you can also subscribe on iTunes, at iTunes, if you're interested. Thank you for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com, big yellow donate button. And those are useful because this thing is burning diesel fuel. You can hear it. And as I sit here with the AC on, it's really burning diesel fuel. And I need that, and I need Komodo Dragon coffee, and that is where the money goes. This thing is crowdfunded, so thank you so much for the donations. Live from Cape Charles, Virginia, this is the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 381. Boop. You're saying they see us. They know we're standing. They
sometimes
they can see us over here.
Oh, these guys? Oh, they probably see us. So they just they might not even care.
So what's with all the boats?
So another park is being on base. We have our own ramp in the Navy, so you can store your sailboat and all that stuff here.
Cool. Just,
these are all military guys who poked their boats here.
That's really cool. Yeah.
So both of these guys are...